You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Mark Abali brought to you by Western PA Injury Attorneys of LGKG, built on relationships, credibility, and integrity, lgkg.com. Kaboom, kind enough to join us even during the Steelers' bye week, where they are getting healthy and not losing anything in the loss column, where teams around them, like the Houston Texans, are going splat against a Jets team that the Steelers pasted by 22 points, largely thanks to a play that if the Steelers end up going something, Mark, like 12-5, I will point back to and I will say this might have been the turning point of the season. Beanie Bishop one-handing an interception off Aaron Rodgers when it looked like the Jets might run them off the field. The complete flip happens and the game turns totally in the Steelers' favor. Rodgers turns into a total pumpkin and the Steelers roll them. I was going to ask you about Mike Tomlin to start with, and he's made one huge right move. Everyone goes against him on the Fields Wilson thing. He gets vindicated. Brandon Marshall's standing in there asking him a question just so he can say, that's why I'm well compensated. And now I feel like with another situation that's far less high profile, it seems to me that he's going to do the exact same thing or close to it. Beanie Bishop, three interceptions, defensive rookie of the week or the month or whatever it was for October. Your ass is on the bench. Cam Sutton, come on down. What's going to happen there?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen right away. I think, you know, you look at any of the history of how he approaches a thing, he's going to ease Cam Sutton in. Cam Sutton's been in the building. He's been working out. He just hasn't been on the field for the most part, at least during practice. I mean, I don't know what he does after the practice. So he's been around. He's been in meetings and all that stuff. But he still has to get game ready. But when they are at equal level, you know, if he jumps on that moving train that Roman Wilson got ran over by, I think, yeah, Cam Sutton is your starting slot corner. I mean, I saw all I needed to see in OTAs, in training camp, and mini camp, that Cam Sutton is very different than a Beanie Bishop or whoever else.
Does he make their defense, is he different as in he makes them better?
A lot better. I think he makes them a lot better. Now, Beanie Bishop's gotten better since, obviously, May and June, but not to the point of Cam Sutton, where that position, I don't think, teams are coming in right now saying, where can we beat the Steelers' defense? What are you going to say? You're going to probably say Beanie Bishop if he's on the field, even if he has been successful. That's where you're targeting. Cam Sutton is an extremely smart guy, and you have to be a very smart guy to play that slot corner because a lot of anticipation comes along with that. Maybe he stunk last year at the outside corner covering the likes of the wide receiver ones, but I think not only does he provide better option as a slot, he provides depth where if Joey Porter, Dante Jackson goes – in a pinch, he can go back outside, too. So it's a huge, huge addition to him this late in the season.
And you feel like it's a pretty no... Well, kind of like it sounds like you thought with Wilson and Fields. You think this is pretty much a no-brainer?
I don't think it's going to happen right away.
But you do think it's a no-brainer, like people are going to understand when he's out there eventually, this is why he's playing over Beanie Bishop.
Yeah, obviously, it's a total different position. You can... Anybody that's watching the quarterback play can see if he's good or bad. I mean, the slot corners... A little bit more.
Well, if he's
nuanced,
not getting thrown at, though, that means he's doing a good job because no one wants to test him.
Yeah, I mean, there's three receivers on the field at all times, and you're going to need a guy like him in there. Beanie Bishop has, I know he's come up with key interceptions, but he's still an undrafted rookie free agent who teams have sought out and targeted for the better part of a month and a half now, so... What would you rather have? Maybe long-term you'd like to have Beanie Bishop. But I think Cam Sutton just provides this defense with just a little bit more.
You mentioned Dante Jackson. I thought he had a pretty rough game against the Giants. They were picking on him, and that makes me ask about this guy. What is the Corey Trice situation as you understand it?
I think I saw him He's always around, right? I think
it'd be
he's
bad
close.
If he was gone. Well, he's just not hanging out.
What I'm saying is I think he has to come off IR. I'm pretty sure he's on IR. There's so many people on IR.
He is still.
I forget who's on IR and who's not on IR. But I think he's close to being having that window opened. But once again, he has a lot of catching up to do.
They were pretty high on the work he was doing, though, right?
Because he's huge, he's big, he's fast.
But like they thought he was a guy that was going to blossom into something, I felt like.
But the whole problem with him is he was hurt.
All last year.
Mostly of his collegiate career, too, as well. So that's what you have to worry about with him. And you got to feel bad for him last year and even this year because he can, once again, provide depth here. But you talk about getting better at the trade deadline. They are getting better now without making any trades when you're getting guys like Zach Frazier back and Cam Sutton and Corey Trice eventually. Those are three solid players that all of a sudden are going to be inserted into your lineup at some point here in the near future.
It is 421.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Time to start your weekend off right with Archie's famous wings. Mike Tomlin in general then. So he's the man making all these decisions. He's the man pushing all these buttons. I mean, you're around him and you're around them more than we are. You're in those press conferences. That's why you lift them weights so you can ask him those questions. Where are you slotting in so far the coaching job he's done with this year's team versus, you know, a lot of the recent years and some of his best years
now,
coaching
that 19
them?
Was tough.
Yeah, like, as far as tough to beat?
No, yeah, it's tough to
beat.
So
you're on my side with that because that has, like, divided people. Yeah. I think Starkey very loudly said, and Pony definitely said, you can't put a season where a guy wins a Super Bowl behind a season like that because they just went 8-8. But, like, I'm with you. That was still insane that he managed to drag that team's carcass to 500.
But on the flip side of that is they were, what, 8-5?
8-5 and then collapsed.
And Le'Veon Bell shoved it down their
yep.
throats in New York, and they just collapsed after
Buffalo
that.
Couldn't handle
and another
Buffalo.
Thing is, when they finally brought Mason back, he got hurt again. He was actually playing pretty well with, well, we know the Myles Garrett and all that stuff happened that year. But
that Jets game, he was doing all right.
Yeah, that's a pretty difficult, but the Jets were awful, even really bad then, so that was a really bad loss. On a side note, what is it? Well, you don't know what the stadium's called up there. The Meadowlands?
Just
the
Meadowlands? I think so.
No,
MetLife Stadium.
MetLife Stadium.
Apparently, that's a dump, and people think it sucks. The turf's really bad.
Oh well, yeah. There's like dozens of people.
Yeah, there's ACL. Yes. There's like blown knees left all over.
Zach Banner about that. But what I was getting at is Ralph Macchio was there at the time. So
here we go. Here's the Karate Kid.
He's a big Jets fan, and I remember looking up on the scoreboard during that game, and I'm like, oh my goodness, there's Ralph Macchio, Daniel LaRusso. So
Fireman Ralph.
I didn't care about him.
Fireman. I was combining Fireman Ed and
Fireman
Ralph.
Ed.
Yeah, Fireman Ralph.
Fireman Ed.
Well, he was Ed. Back last night.
I thought he quit for
He's
a while.
Quit like 10 times. He's a drama queen and a baby. That guy sucks. I hate that dude. I don't even know him. You're not supposed to hate people you don't know. You're not supposed to hate people you do know. That guy's a huge loser. I'm sorry. I don't care if he's doing like good work on the side. You're a grown man. You're like a retirement age guy who's putting a fire helmet on.
With the Steelers, I always enjoyed the
Steelers Pope?
Steelers Jesus, actually. He dressed like Jesus every day.
Well, then there was the Steelers Pope.
Yeah, he's still around. But the Steelers Jesus, one day, they played in Christmas, I believe, against the Ravens, and he was held a sign that said, happy birthday to me.
That's pretty good.
But he quit.
So Tom, he just left. He was done with the direction of the team.
He was done and he left.
Where would you kind of slot this one in, though? Because for me, just quickly, it's got to be one of his best coaching jobs simply for this reason. They're 6-2, which is, I thought, kind of a bare minimum what they had to do these first eight, given what people thought the back half was going to look like. But we criticized him. Does this guy know how to handle quarterbacks who aren't Ben Roethlisberger? Like, does he know how to actually figure out who's the best? You know, he puts Mason in last year definitely later than he should have and then reaps the benefits late. He made a huge move, and not a popular one, with the quarterbacks. And two games in, I think people are looking at them differently than they did even when they started 4-2 because of it. Like, yeah, to me, that has to be a pretty huge feather in his cap.
I mean, I know you get fired up over this all the time when the national folks say that he just doesn't have the players or whatever. Well, he's part of the guy that's buying.
He's making the grocery list and so going shopping.
He made this grocery list too. So this grocery list of players right now seem to be working out pretty well. So
yeah, I would give him credit. Yes.
Yeah, what I'm saying is we don't tend to talk about that when it works out in his favor. That he able to bring. I think they had a clear plan of how they wanted to approach this, and so far it is working exactly how they wanted it to work. And I mean, even from bringing in the new coaches, I mean, those are stuff part that you don't really pay attention to with Coach of the Year, but bringing in guys like Tom Arth and Zach Azzani and Arthur Smith, those are some very, very different coaches, the coaches that needed to be with this team. And he was able to somehow get Eddie Faulkner to come back. He's probably one of the better position coaches around. Have Mike Sullivan come back. That's all part of it, too. But to answer your question, this has to be, in my eyes, probably right now as we sit at 6-2, it has to be number two. I mean, I can't really think of something other than the 19 season that would even remotely.
And this looks like a way better team than that team ended up being. Like, this feels like and I want to get into this next. Like, where they go, 6-2. I feel like suddenly that back half of the schedule doesn't look as daunting.
But are we being guilty of going flopping, man? Saying everything's perfect with their team?
Oh, you know what?
You know,
I got an idea then. Forget about looking at the back half of the schedule. We're gonna inject a very healthy dose of pessimism, cynicism.
Yeah, me and you, that's great.
Right, this is what we do best.
You know, Tyrone Tracy or whatever his name did rush for 140 yards.
I get accused of finding the dark cloud around that fills in every silver lining. So you know what? We're going to do this next.
There's many shades of gray.
Negativity coming up next. It's one of the many services Kaboom and Malzi provide on a football Friday. Fan Twitter at 93.7 The Fan is brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them, southhillskia.net. Here's a fan headline.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.